Blog Talk Radio.
About the year 2020.
And I guess his insight into the apocalypse, we'll let him talk to you about this. I won't go into it. I'll let him chat about this. And that's what we have for tonight. And, of course, it's time for commercial for a particular reason that I will explain after we take this commercial break.
What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies. And that's no fairy tale.
Yes, you can see this on brownies.com, but the news, here's the news about them. They just came out with new brownies. It's not bad enough that they're so delicious, honest, that they're so chocolatey and wonderful and really the best brownies I've ever tasted. They are now going to be, they have three varieties, enrobed in chocolate as well. They're calling them truffle brownies to add to this. I do remember that they're doing a raspberry swirl and a caramel. Oh, yes, I think it was a walnut. I will let you know next week how they taste. I'll try to save one to eat on the air like I do with my wine tasting. This will be chocolate brownie tasting. Maybe I can, I would say get some other companies to send me brownies and do a brownie tasting, but I already know there's no way, Jose, that I would like any other brownies. So that's what's going on, and let's see, what's coming up, where am I going to? Well, let's see, on Sunday, I'm going to see a Chinese opera, Qi Shu Fang Opera Company. I think, yes, it's a woman. We had her on the air several weeks ago, so I'm going to see this show. Looking forward to it, and to see this woman doing the martial arts as well. I don't know. I guess, you know, you could people dance and sing it. This one, I guess you're kicking and singing, I suppose. Next Wednesday, I'm going to see a new play called The Sale of Two Titties. Oh, I'm sorry. I keep doing that. A Tale of Two Cities. It's a musical version of A Tale of Two Cities. I keep doing that. Because in the book Up the Down Staircase, of which I was in a movie of, in the book Up the Down Staircase, somebody comes out and, you know, refers to the book as A Sale of Two Titties, and another book is referred to as Silly Ass Marner. And so, you know, those things keep staying in my head. So I will be seeing that show on Wednesday. So, I am ready to talk about Quebec. So, do we have Danny?
Yes, I am there, he and that Merle.
I tried to pronounce your last name.
Danny is exactly the right way to pronounce it.
No, the first name I got right.
Yeah?
Your last name?
Béliveau. Yes, you're good.
Well, after you pronounced it, I got it.
That's okay. There is word in English that I have a lot of problem to pronounce, too.
Okay. into, Brian talked about some of the history that related to, like, how Canada began and this relationship with the United States. And I kind of want to get into this, so perhaps you can tell us?
Well, a little bit. I could certainly tell you about the Eastern Townships area history. Eastern Township is part of Quebec, and Quebec is part of Canada. Quebec was, in fact, created 400 years ago in the 17th century when the French people came to New France to develop the area, like, you know, the people from Great Britain developed the New England. That was more or less at the same time. But in 1760, there was a war between France and Great Britain, and Great Britain won. So they got Canada as a new colony for them. And from that time till the end of the 18th century, there was nobody in the Eastern Townships. But because of the independence war in the United States, there were some loyalists who didn't feel welcome in the United States, didn't want to become an independent country, so they decided to move up to Canada. This part is, in fact, at that time was a no man's land. There was nobody that was living in the area, and I don't know why, because it's a really beautiful area with, you know, mountains and lakes and very rich also soil for, you know, having wonderful farm. So at the end of the 18th century, the in fact, the government from Canada, that was, in fact, as I said, a colony, they create this area. They had the decree, and they decide that this area will be called Eastern Townships. And they divided the territory exactly like the English people were used to do in townships. It's a 10 miles by 10 miles square territory compared to the French system that was the rang, that was the seigneury, that was a long and narrow piece of land that was usually coming from river or lake to, you know, deeper in the territory. So that's the first, you know, difference between, you know, the townships and the rest of the province of Quebec.
So now let me ask you a question. So when you say the loyalists, because that, you know, I don't even know what were the loyalists.
Oh, the loyalists. They were, you know, they were living in United States, because before United States became United States, it was, in fact, a colony from, you know, United Kingdom. And the loyalists were people who didn't want to become American. They really want to stay faithful to the crown of, you know, the British. I think it was a king at that time. So they want to stay, you know, British citizen. But they didn't want to go back to Great Britain. So the other option for them was to move over, you know, move north of the border and became, you know, a Canadian citizen. And that way they stayed in the I would say that faithful to the king. So that was, you know, what the loyalists were.
So in other words, so the French came here and they claimed a part of the land. I mean, was there a Canada and even United States? Was there even a border at that point?
Well, honestly, I think there was. But at the beginning, you know, in the 16th century, 17th century, there was more or less a border because there was a governor, you know, but it was not like today with, you know, custom officer all along the border. So
right.
I think people knew more or less where, you know, they were. There was some map, you know, showing that this was New England, this was New France, but it was not like today, you know, a straight line that you can say this is United States, this is Canada. It was, and particularly in our region, that was, in fact, a kind of a buffer, you know, between French and English. So most people that were traveling here were Abenakis Indians, and they were just passing by, you know, for the summer they were coming in our area, and during the fall and winter they were going south because they knew it was warmer over there.
So in other words, it was actually, you were kind of either New England or New France?
Exactly.
Okay, but that's not just, that was just the eastern area, right? I mean, things were going on elsewhere in the rest of Canada, I guess, right?
Oh, my God. You know, if we're talking about the 17th century, more or less, except New England, more or less was French territories, because the some of our, you know, explorer, like Mr. de La Salle and even Champlain, who founded Quebec City, they traveled along the Mississippi, and they went right through Louisiana. So, in fact, Louisiana was a French territory before it was, you know, it became, you know, American. So, for that reason, the French were, they were traveling all around, you know, America to get some fur, because the commerce of fur were very, you know, lucrative. They make a lot of money out of it, and, you know, they were really going far and far away to get fur from the Indians and bring it back to Europe, mostly in French and in France and in, you know, Great Britain at that time, because, you know, the people who were in New England, they were also, you know, making money with the fur. But it became really more, you know, organized, if I can say, in the 18th century, when, you know, there was the war between France and England or Great Britain, and they divide the territory. At that moment, they were starting to have real border. I don't know if they had, you know, the same kind of, you know, line that we have today, but at least at that time they knew this is France, this is New England, this is New France, and eventually it became Canada.
So now, when we're looking at the just the location of the Eastern Township, just so the audience can get a picture of this,
mm-hmm.
If you're actually going north from the United States,
yes, we are north.
What states?
We are north of Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine.
Okay.
So it's exactly, we're sharing the border with Vermont. Our, you know, the township are, you know, starting just east of the Champlain Lake. And we are going east to, you know, all, you know, the Vermont border, New England, New Hampshire, and even Maine. So it's a huge territory. It's about a little bit more than 8,000 square miles.
And along that whole area, I don't know if I should assume, there are only certain points that you can enter. And
oh, well,
I guess you have to know where all the entrance places are, right?
There is many, but there are less than before, because before there was a lot of small roads, you know. People, before 9/11, you know, and even, let's say like maybe 50 years ago, we were, you know, there was two countries. People knew there was two countries. There was border, but it was not as important as it is today. We still have many, you know, places where you can cross the border, but it's now on, you know, roads with numbers, more of them. We have some that are highways with huge, you know, installation for custom on both sides of the border, of course.
Well, I would imagine there's at least like, how many places, I mean, like, which has the most places, from which state has the most crossings?
Oh, it's the for us it's Vermont.
Vermont.
It's really Vermont. Yes, Vermont. The most important point is Stanstead.
Stanstead, is that what
Stanstead.
It's called?
Stanstead, exactly, and it's on Highway 91. So
well, that's pretty good. So anybody who's on this coast,
yeah,
to understand that basically, Main route 95 will take you right into 91.
Exactly, and 93
right
also. Yeah, and 93 also is connected to 91. So you can come easily from Boston. It's about 4 hours drive. From New York City, it's about seven hours drive. So it's not that far away. And the advantage is that it's a lot easier to cross the border by car than by plane. There is less delay usually.
Right. Now, of course, we have to look at what costs more because of the gas right now. We have to look at that, which I thought, you know, that would be an interesting thing to figure out, what would cost more.
Yeah, that's true. That's exactly true. But in another way, the township, it's a huge territory, as I mentioned it, and we don't have any transportation. So you can take, you know, a car like, you know, a Greyhound, you know, bus, to come to the township, but if you want to discover it, it's a lot better if you are coming by car. But you can also take the plane to Montreal, that is the closest, you know, airport in Canada for us, or to Burlington. You can also take, you know, your plane to Burlington, Vermont, and you can just rent a car and cross the border.
As a matter of fact, JetBlue goes into Burlington.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
That's a piece of information out there.
Yeah.
So just to get an idea, what are, all right, so if you're in Montreal, or we say Montreal, how far would you say is like when you go to what's considered the eastern townships? How far away is that?
A little less than an hour.
Okay.
Yeah, from the airport.
And
because it's also an highway to go from Montreal to the townships. There is the Eastern Townships highway that is called in French Autoroute des Cantons de l'Est. It's highway number 10 for us.
Oh, okay.
In Quebec. Yes, there is a highway.
And in terms of the Eastern Townships itself, how many of these townships are there?
How many of Eastern Townships are?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Merle, I don't understand your question.
In other words, of how many townships?
Oh, at the beginning when they draw the township map, there was 95. 95
right.
Townships.
And now?
Well, it's about the same. But, you know, we use those, township's name mostly for, you know, when you buy land and you sell land. So it's most, you know, they're still there, but there are some villages that kept the name of the townships. That were, you know, created at the end of the 18th century, beginning of the 19th century.
And which of the townships would you say are the largest that have the most? I guess I don't want to say cosmopolitan because none of them really are.
They are. Yes, you're right. In a certain way, they are because they were developed by loyalists, but then after came the Irish people, Scottish people, people from also Great Britain. Well, the townships are exactly, the territory is the same. They are all 10 miles by 10 miles. The most populous, you know, popular, and also the one that are more, you know, famous, if I can say, you have the little village of Knowlton, that we visit together when you were here this week.
Right.
There is also Bromont, that is a younger town with a ski hill just next to it. So, of course, it's very popular. They have also plenty of other things you can do around Bromont. Another area that is very popular is Magog and Orford. It's two towns that are very close by. Orford is also a mountain and a national park. And Magog is situated just at the north part of Memphremagog Lake. The other end of the lake, the south part, is in Vermont.
Okay. And what about, Sherbrooke was...
Sherbrooke is, that's another good point. Sherbrooke is the main town, but it's more a town. So sometimes for tourists, it's less something they are, you know, naturally will choose to visit. Because when they come from a city, they want to see the countryside. And that's what the townships are. But Sherbrooke is a very interesting place. There is a lot of history over there, and there is also a beautiful landscape. We have in Sherbrooke a lake, and around the lake they had, you know, cycling paths, walking paths. You can even do some skating during the winter next to the lake. So it's a very central and attractive area also.
Now, also just so... our readers, I'm doing too much writing. our radio listeners, so they know. Does everybody speak English and French?
Well, everybody speaks French, and most of us are bilingual. So there is something I can certainly promise to your listeners. If they need anything in English in Sherbrooke, they will be able to get it. And anywhere in the township, they will be able to be served in English. And people will be pleased to help and pleased to practice their English also.
And how is the money situation?
I'm sorry?
The money situation. We just get a little bit more, right? Our dollar.
Yeah. Yes, I think your dollar worth maybe $1.05 for us. For us, you see, the exchange yesterday was 93 cents for your dollar. So you're doing better than last, you know, in the last couple of months.
Right. Well, we're certainly doing better than euro dollars, that's for sure.
Oh, yes. You're better with us than with the euro. And,
yeah. Just make-believe. We just have to go there and make-believe we're in Europe.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and we'll get a better
deal.
That's
the advantage of, you know, us, particularly the townships, because we have the New England charm with the, you know, Victorian houses, nice village, very cute village with a lot of nice mansions that are still as beautiful as they were when they were built a couple of hundred years ago. But we also have the French-Canadian spirit, so it's like New England charm with a Quebec flair. And as Quebec people, we like to eat, we like good food, we like enjoying life. So we also have here in a wine route with 16 vineyards that people can discover how we make wine here, because it's a little bit different than in California.
Yes.
Because we have to cope with the cold here.
Mm-hmm. So we'll be talking about that next week. Next week we're gonna talk about the food and the places that we went to. Are you gonna join me next week?
I can do that, certainly.
Oh, yeah.
With pleasure.
Okay.
With pleasure.
You were accompanying us most of the time, right?
Yes, exactly. And I'm the one who planned the tour you had.
Oh, okay. Then we have you to thank for that plan.
Yeah, well, thank you. It was a pleasure, in fact, welcoming you. And it's a very nice area to present to people, honestly.
Oh, I enjoyed it. And I think everybody else on the trip enjoyed it. And by the way, I'm sorry you missed my doing a scene from The Wizard of Oz.
Oh. Oh, you will have to do that for me next week.
Yes, I will. You'll have to ask about that. All right, I'll talk to you next week then, Denny.
Okay. Well, it was a pleasure, Merle. So enjoy the rest of your show and talk to you next week.
Okay.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye.
Oh, that, yeah, it was really good. I loved the trip. I think I'd like to go back and spend a few more days there. But, well, before I go on to my next guest, let me take a commercial break since I spoke about good old JetBlue.
Thank you for calling JetBlue. May I help you?
My cousin was telling me you guys have extra legroom.
Uh-huh. We have extra leg room as compared to a normal coach seat.
Okay. If I don't have an extra leg, can I use that room for something else?
No. That is not what the extra leg implies. We took out one whole row of seats, and that gave the rest of those rows a couple of extra inches of leg room.
Ah.
I understand what you mean. The words extra leg imply that, but it has nothing to do with having an extra leg.
I'm a pretty literal person.
Uh-huh. Well, that would be taking it very literally.
I guess a little too literally.
Okay. Is there anything else I can help you with?
I think that's it. You've been pretty helpful.
Thanks for calling JetBlue.
Dear traveler, stretch out. We now have the most legroom in coach. Visit us at JetBlue.com. Sincerely, JetBlue. Based on average fleet-wide seat pitch of U.S. Airlines.
I just love that commercial. I meant to tell everybody on Monday, next Monday, I'm going to see the new JetBlue building at JFK. Yes, and it happens that I understand there's also a sports bar restaurant that's located there. And, well, I'm sure they need some photos for their sports bar. So I think I will donate a team photo of the New York Sharks. Why not? So let's go on to our next guest. Okay, did I open up the mic? Let's open up the mic. Who do I got?
Hi, Merle.
Lee?
That's me.
All right.
Sorry, we're having our last farmer's market of the season out here, so it's getting a little crazy.
Oh, yeah? Are you at the farmer's market now?
We're at the market right now.
Oh, cool.
You know, you were out here. You know what this is like. And the crowds are going, probably the heaviest one we've seen all year.
Oh,
and it's they have the last of the produce out. I'm looking at peaches and plums and nectarines, and it's a good time to live in this side of the country.
If someone passes by and you want them to say hello on the air, you know, you could just do that.
Well, if you remember my investor Earl, the one you originally met, he's out here now, which is the reason I could break away from the tent and give you a holler.
Okay, sure.
But no, I heard you talking about, you know, still a little more cooking with peaches, and with the peach season is just wrapping up now. We're hitting our wine season now out here also. The Colorado Mountain Fest Wine Festival is this weekend in Palisade, and they'll have about 7,000 to 10,000 people in Riverbend Park.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Well, you know with the way we like to cook it, you know, and being from New Jersey, you know, I have to know how to cook. But not only do we do our peach cheesecakes, but our wine cheesecakes. We do a blackberry Cabernet and a blueberry Merlot, a port fig. If it's wine and it's fruit, we can pair them in a cheesecake for you.
Oh, can you? If you make up any interesting cheesecakes, send them out to me, you know?
Well, actually, we're heading down to Scottsdale this Monday for an award we won. We can't officially announce it yet because they have to wait for the magazine to come out. But as soon as we get back, we have four new flavors we're working with, one of which is a sake cheesecake.
Oh.
I'm designing one for a Japanese restaurant out here. It's going to be incorporating sesame seeds, tahini butter, and kind of a sake reduction sauce with crystallized ginger. We have a no-sugar chocolate coming out. We have a pineapple upside down, and then a green tea cheesecake with bee pollen.
Wow.
Well, you got to push the boundaries, Merle. You know how that is.
Well, you know you have to send them to me. I'll eat it on the air.
As soon as I get some more flavors out, we will definitely send you some out. And one of the things I was going to say, you know, I mentioned, you were talking about doing some other kind of cooking here, especially with peaches. I was one of the celebrity chefs at this year's Palisade Peach Fest. And when we get on stage, everybody expects me to do some kind of 10,000 calorie, you know, dessert. And I always do a salad. And I'm looking here at a recipe, which we'd be glad if any of your listeners would like the recipe. Just drop me an email. But this is a summer asparagus medley salad with peaches, pistachios, and scallions. It came out really nice, super easy to prepare. Maybe 15 minutes from start to finish, because I fell into the trap on stage where, hey, let's do something that takes 15 courses and 5 days to prep, and you know, like 16 burners going. People at home are never going to do that. Anything we do on stage, we do so people at home can make it and enjoy it. You know, you don't have to be a certified chef to do a lot of cooking. Being from Atlantic City, I can attest to that.
You know, I have to tell you, this is really funny. As we're talking, I just got an email, a press release from Leif Johnson.
Yeah, the Wine Fest is one of the two premier events in Palisade. The Palisade Peach Fest, obviously. But this Wine Fest has started from a small little event, like one day at Pierpont Wineries. I think they have 70 wineries participating this year. It's spread out over 4 days. They have winemakers dinners at some of the best restaurants around town. And let's see, then they have the actual festival, which is in the park. And I just pulled out, we have some brochures on our table for it. And I'm sitting there looking at 75 different wineries. Now, I know New York has some great wines. In Jersey, we have some good wines. A lot of people didn't know that Colorado's got some really good wines. And the fact that you were out here, you know, you could attest to this part of Colorado where we live. Colorado is not just Denver. If you come out to the western slope, we have, we have 10,000-foot mountains and the Grand Mesas out here, the Colorado River, the Gunnison River. It's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, I thought so. I loved it.
You know, and the thing, it's a great place, you know.
Yeah.
But like I said, we have a couple different recipes. People are more than happy to go to our website. You know, you have our decadentcheesecakes.com, and we have a recipe thing up there with some recipes we did for one of the local breweries where we cooked everything with their beers, soup to nuts. We did ale-battered onion rings with a Creole mustard dipping sauce, among other things. We have cookie recipes up there. And again, if anybody would just like some of our peach salad recipes that we do on stage, I'd be more than happy to send them to your listeners.
Well, here's the thing that I want to know. I mean, I have, I now have peach, let's see, peach jam, peach preserves, peach syrup. What the fuck is the difference between...
Now I know I'm talking to New York. gotta love Queens. Not that we used to work in Queens, but that's another story. Just in time, like percentages of sweetness in them. Some are thicker than the others. But I'll tell you right now, with what you have there, next time you feel like doing a piece of pork, take some of your peach preserves, maybe dice up some jalapenos, mix that in there, and about halfway when you're cooking your pork, pull it out and glaze it with that. One of the dishes we did for when we catered Feast in the Fields this year was a stuffed pork, pork loin. But we did a peach apricot habanero glaze on, jalapeno glaze on that, and a nice slow roast on there, and the peach flavor just permeates it. But with the thing is, and this is what I like about cooking. You know, I've gone to culinary school, but I'm not. I don't consider myself a fancy chef. People ask me. I say I'm a cook from Jersey. Play with it. Okay, it's got some of the best flavors out there. If people go to the Palisade, Leif, I'm sure gave you the email. I mean, the website for the Palisade. You know, for Palisade. If they go to the Peach Fest logo on there, they can see about 6 years of winning recipes at the Peach Fest, and okay, I might be on there 3 or 4 times.
Right.
You know? Sorry. But there's at least 200 recipes on their website with different ways to use peaches, peach jam, peach preserves, peach syrup. Make yourself some nice, maybe some nice pancakes, a little bit of peach syrup over on top of that. A little bit of Scrapple on the side. Okay, that gives away my East Coast roots.
Well, that's what I was trying to figure out is, other than putting these things on bread, I was trying to figure out, like, what to do with them.
Oh, glazes. Glazes, and more glazes.
Okay.
We've done chicken, you know, we did peach chicken thighs, okay, for the Feast in the Fields. We did a matambre, which is like a stuffed rolled steak, which we incorporated a little of the peach in. We did the stuffed pork loin I had mentioned about that. You can do it in ice cream. If anybody likes playing around with the field they call molecular gastronomy, which is basically just a lot of syllables saying fancy scientific cooking, liquid nitrogen, you can make instant ice cream, okay? Make some ice cream, even if you have a home ice cream maker, and just put a little bit of that peach syrup in it. There's a lot of uses, you know. Now, again, being from South Jersey, I think there's many uses for cranberries at the same time.
Right. Oh, so that would be, so in other words, I could use, like, cutting up the peaches, and I assume I take off the skin when I'm doing this, like, to make ice cream, right?
Yeah, just do a quick blanch, you know, drop them in boiling water for about 30 seconds, then drop them in an ice bath, and the skins will peel off nice and easy. And then, like, you know, most ice cream makers will come with a standard recipe for, like, vanilla ice cream. Actually, again, if you go to Palisade Peach Fest stuff online, a couple of the winning recipes have been peach ice cream. Another, a simple thing is peaches and cream. Just slice up the peaches and a little bit of heavy cream on top, just maybe a little sprinkling of powdered sugar on top of that. Now, one little trick with peaches, I've always found out that a very little bit of cayenne, if I'm making a dish that's going to call for chopped peaches, I'll chop the peaches, put them in a bowl, and maybe like just not even an eighth of a teaspoon, and just mix that on. But cayenne will even bring that flavor out a little bit more.
Really? I was noticing that in the jars that I got from Farmer Bob, I noticed that there was a little bit of almond extract.
Yeah, again, it's just different flavors complement each other, okay? When I start telling people that, like, I always like sprinkling just a little bit of cayenne on my peaches when I use them in a recipe, they're going, "What, cayenne?" They think it's going to burn their mouth. And sometimes if you don't use spices to excess, they really do accentuate and bring out the flavors of these things.
I will make an attempt. to try these things.
You know what, Merle, after talking to you when you were out here, I have no doubt that, you know, if you get pick up some of those recipes, you know, on the sites, you'll sit back and be like, damn, that's not bad.
And by the way, is there anyone near you?
I'm just walking around right now. Earl's running the booth.
Go up to somebody.
Okay.
And just say hello to Merle Exit.
Okay. Here, say hello to Merle Exit.
Hello there.
Hi. How are you?
I'm fine.
Are you? You buying some stuff there at the market?
Yeah. This is the finale.
Yeah. What are you getting?
The last one.
The last one of what?
The last one of the farmers' markets.
Uh huh.
End of summer.
Okay. Anything in specific that you like? Specifically, that you find the best of? Like, you know, well, you know the peaches are ending, right?
Well, peaches are actually extending into October. There's still three varieties of peaches they haven't harvested yet. It's been late this year.
Oh, okay. By the way, what's your name?
I'm Merle. Okay, well, I'll pass the phone back to Lee. Nice talking.
This guy's name was Merle?
Oh, back to you, Merle. How you doing again?
Who'd you give the phone to?
The gentleman right next to me.
Oh, okay. He was just somebody shopping?
Yeah, you said to give the phone to somebody, and I think the first guy I saw.
Did you tell him, is he still there?
I'm walking the other way now.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, you didn't tell him that he was on the air, huh?
I kind of mouthed the words to him. I think a surprise is part of life.
Okay. All right. Let's catch somebody else. This is fun. Are you kidding?
Let me see who I got here. Let me walk down to one of the fruit vendors. I'm going to go over to Z's Orchards, which is, I think you were at their booth and they're out here. They're one of the bigger orchards out here.
Uh-huh.
And let me see if I can grab somebody from over there.
Yeah, somebody was just shopping around.
Let's see. Well, remember, Western Colorado, you got to be careful about things like that. let's see. I see somebody. Hey, Carol, you got 30 seconds to talk to somebody on radio in New York City? Okay. As soon as she's done a sale, we're going to introduce you to Carol Zadrodny. She's the owner of Z's Orchards out here in Palisade.
Oh.
And, yeah, Carol, this is Merle Exit. She has a radio show in New York City. She was out here about a month ago and wants to talk to people during the last farmer's market.
Okay.
Merle, Carol.
Hey, Merle, this is Carol Pedrosi, Z's Orchard.
Hi, how are you?
We are awesome. We're just absolutely gorgeous tonight and with our last market, and we're wishing we had more, but we're really celebrating tonight.
So is it that everybody's buying the last of the peaches?
It is not the last of the peaches. We will have peaches for several weeks yet. We have late varieties. All of our winter squash and our summer squash is still in. We have everything. This is a fabulous time of year.
Oh, great. Yeah, I was there. I was at we hit the farmer's market and the peach festival.
Right. Well, good for you all. The Peach Festival was wonderful, wonderful, and we're getting ready for the Wine Fest this weekend, and everyone is celebrating up a storm. And if now that I have listeners, I'd like to give you my website, which is zsorchard.com. And we are still shipping lovely, lovely Colorado peaches. And so if they get on my website and they want to have 20 gorgeous, perfect peaches shipped, they certainly can order them.
Well, you know, I can do a taste test.
Yes. Did you have a taste test at Peach Fest?
No, I mean, I can do a taste test. You want to send me some peaches?
Yes. Well, it's wish you were here. It's absolutely gorgeous, perfect temperature, beautiful music, great, gorgeous fruit. I should send you a picture of our stand. It's all decorated for fall.
Okay. You know, I'll email you.
Yes, do. Email me.
Okay.
And it's carol@leesorchard.com.
Okay, you got it.
Oh, well, I'm going to give you back to Lee. I've got a line of people here wanting to buy peaches.
Sure.
Nice talking to you, Merle. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, Merle.
Hi. fun?
Yeah, I'm just, let me get out of the booth. I get back to our booth. I see a line forming.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, if you see a line forming, that's better. Somebody online. Let's get somebody who's on the line. And I want to ask them, and on your line that's buying the cheesecake.
Let me get back over to our booth.
Okay, that would be really cool. I'd just like to hear their reaction. Don't even say to the person, don't tell them they're on the radio.
Okay.
Just say that you have, that somebody, just say a writer. There's a
okay.
writer from New York, and she wants to ask you about the cheesecakes. That's all.
Give me one second here. I see a gorgeous young lady walking up to me.
Oh, okay.
I have a writer on the phone who would like to talk to you about cheesecakes.
Okay.
Hello?
Hi, what's your name?
My name is Tricia.
Tricia, hi. My name is Merle.
Hi, Merle.
I understand you're buying the cheesecakes?
Yes, I am.
Tell me, what do you like about them?
They're just so smooth. I mean, I tried the blueberry one, and they just have such a smooth taste to them. I mean, I love cheesecake. My grandmother used to make it for me when I was little all the time. But this beats all. I mean, you can taste the real fruit in them. I mean, they're awesome.
Do you like the cheesecakes because they're the combinations of things in there or the cheesecake itself?
The cheesecake itself is a really good taste, but you get the combination of, like, the pear and the cheesecake and then the crumb stuff on the bottom, the graham cracker stuff.
Right.
And it's awesome. I mean, you just can't beat it.
Do you stock up on it?
Am I what?
Do you stock
I buy it, yeah. You can buy the little jars 3 for $10. Yeah, and I mean, I eat it all the time.
Oh, great.
It's crazy. Yeah, but it's very, very good.
I try them. I think they're really good.
Yeah. They got that new one out, the strawberry one, and it's the fat-free one.
Oh, okay.
And that's, yeah, now I'm hooked on it. So
okay.
It's like once a week I try a different flavor.
So when they call it fat-free, does it mean they don't charge you for the fat?
No. I know. I was like, what, do I not get charged for that fat? No, I think they actually make the fat-free cheesecake, which you can find in the store. You know, I've bought fat-free cheesecake at the store. I think that they really do that.
Okay.
But it doesn't taste like, you know how normally you get those fat-free things and they taste like the diet stuff?
Yeah.
They have that taste to them. This doesn't.
Oh,
I mean, you can taste the real strawberries and stuff. It's really good.
Oh, okay. Maybe I'll try that one day.
Oh, God, dude. It's so good.
Okay.
Yeah.
And by the way, I just thought I'd let you know. I just thought I would let you know something. You're actually live on the radio right now.
Oh, my God. Okay. Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, I'll turn you back over to the boss. Here you go.
Sure.
Hi, Merle.
Hi.
Hold on, let me adjust my phone here. I don't even want to think what the cell phone charge is going to be on this call.
Okay. You want it? That was a lot of fun, you know?
Well, listen, you know, when you came out here, you were a nice person. I felt bad that we never got together before, and so I finally figured out how to use my cell phone for an alarm clock that didn't go off.
Oh, okay.
That's the reason I called in late.
Oh, it's okay. Not a problem.
Yeah, but listen, I want to thank you for the opportunity for coming on the show. Hopefully we brought some memories back at a Western Slope of Colorado for you, specifically Grand Junction in Palisade, Colorado. And if a boy from Jersey can be happy out here, it can't be a bad place. Now if you get a decent cheesesteak.
That's true. And I can't wait to try the new cheesecake.
Yeah, and seriously, if you drop Carol an email, you know, at Z's Orchards, I'm sure she'd send you some peaches, too. And like they said, I'm not really, you know, I don't know that much about the harvest season out here, but supposedly it's a late harvest. So we're going to have fresh peaches out here about another month or so.
That's great.
And again, you know, and again, anybody who wants some recipes, have them feel free to go to our website, you know, decadencecheesecakes.com. They could drop me an email. I'd be more than happy to send some recipes on the house. And we'll keep you appraised of upcoming flavors.
Okay, you'll keep me abreast of the situation.
Well, thank you again, Merle. Say hi to everybody for us.
I will.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I think that's so cool, just getting people off the street and talking when they don't know they're on the radio. Well, that I like that. That's a lot of fun. So let's see. Let's break instead of a commercial.
Are you ready for some football?
Okay, Mallory, leave it alone. Mallory's in here. I know. No, Mallory, just nod your head. Yeah, just nod your head. I know you don't want to talk. Let's get a little music, a little music. Let's see. Let's do. Nah, I don't want anything calm. Let's do Janis Joplin. Janis Joplin. All right, so let's as I'm waiting for my next caller, let's see, do I need a, should I do a commercial? Let's get the, whose commercial am I getting in here? I'll tell you what. Let's do a calmer song. Oh, yes, of course. Girl Josh.
And I can feel your heart in mine. Your face I've memorized, I idolize just you. I look up to
fair to ask. I don't want to put you on the spot.
It's. I have to tell you, and I tell my audience anyway, I rarely read, so it's not, I mean, I read like the first couple of chapters.
I hear.
Just to get an idea, but I mean, when I'm writing or talking about a book, I don't want to, like, give away any more information than necessary. You know,
I hear for sure.
So what I would like you to do is to talk about the book too. First let's get what the subject of the book is.
Okay, could I just ask you one quick question?
Yeah.
My wife is also on the line. You know, we speak together. She's the editor. We work together. Would you like her on the show, or would you, you know, rather not? Whatever you prefer.
What do you mean? Does she have an extension phone?
Yeah, I'm on one extension. She's on the other. I just want to.
Hi, how are you?
No, just fine. Now you can. Yeah, sure. Oh, of course. Like, it's wonderful. We'll have everybody on. They'll have a party line here. It's not
the more the merrier.
Sure. Not a problem.
Fine. Great. And one other quick question, then I'll stop the questions.
Yes.
How long do you think we'll be talking, or do you don't know now?
How long?
Yeah.
It's up to you. I have about a half an hour left to the show.
That's fine. Wonderful.
Okay, so you got that time. That time to talk. So, so now that you finished asking me questions, which I should be asking you questions instead.
Okay. Okay.
All right. So, tell. All right. Let's make believe I didn't even look at the book or anything. Tell me what the book is about.
What the book is about? Good. Fine.
Yeah.
The book takes place in the year 2020. And what happens is that there is a massive attack, terrorist attack on the United States. We find out later that it's also Europe. And just this chaos. And everyone realizes immediately. It's very personal. All my books are very personal. So it starts in our home. And my wife and I just, you know, like, what do? We see, you know, you hear bombs going off. You see the explosion. The sky is lighting up. They're obviously extremely powerful explosions. The electricity goes out, and people are panicking. So we want to escape with our lives. So what do? We realize there's going to be total gridlock. We get on our bikes, we take off, we try to find our children, and then eventually we want to just get away from the metropolitan area of New York because, you know, you figure the country is a little safer maybe, and we meet our children by an amazing coincidences, and then there's a whole group of us, and we start walking, and we all are walking together, and we walk toward New England, and eventually, since this is a Jewish group, and you know, I have to be true to what I am, the whole Jewish orientation to it, and we want to get to the age-old dream. We want to get to Israel, but how do you get to Israel? There are no more planes. You know, you can't just get on a plane anymore. And that's the basic plot of the book. The world seems to be falling apart, but we still want to fulfill our dreams, and we believe in dreams, and we're full of idealism still. And you know, how do you get through it all? And it's really a metaphor for all of life. In other words, all the chaos we see around us. How do you get through it all? That's really the question.
So now, are you writing this? Of course, you know, this is. It hasn't happened.
It has not happened, and we hope it never happens. By the way, of course.
but when you're writing this, in other words, you're writing this from your own personal thoughts of what would happen if this did happen.
That is correct. That's the orientation. That is true.
But it's also, if I may say, it's also based on prophecy. It's also based on the realities of today's world. So, for example, the development of certain kinds of bombs, the electromagnetic a bomb that could destroy the communications above the United States. There are all kinds of weapons and technologies that are being developed or are developed that are in the book that are real. And so it's very much based on reality, and it's based on prophecy as well, and our vision of how we as Jews and how people in general would be able to get through it and come to better times.
So now, is this all, I mean, not all, but as I was reading it, so is this like, you know, for the Messiah?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, what's the Messiah mean? The Messiah means basically that this is the classic Jewish belief, which has been adopted in certain ways by many people, is that there's going to come a time at the end of history when the world is going to be peaceful and everyone's going to get along. It's going to be a peaceful world, not a frightening world. It's going to be the kind of world that, you know, all good people, I think, dream about. And the Messiah is going to be the king of the Jewish people. But it's going to be a universal era of peace and justice for the world. And, you know, we have never given up on that dream. I think, you know, people, most good people do have dreams. That's really what that dream represents. And to us, it's more than a dream. You know, we believe it's gonna happen.
Now, the word, there's a different word. You're not using the word Messiah. You're using a different word, right? What's the?
You mean in Hebrew, like Mashiach?
Yes. Okay, that's what.
It's the same. Yeah, but okay. They're just the same word in different languages. But Messiah is the English translation of Mashiach. It's the same word.
Okay, and this is just my own question.
Sure.
That I had noticed when you're doing the prayers. Now, because you're writing this, is that why you're using the term? You're not allowed to use God's name.
The Jewish tradition is to spell God G-D. Because it's a pretty simple explanation. Because if you would spell out the name God completely, then the book, you know, that you're writing it in, or the piece of paper you're writing it on, would become like a holy book, like a Bible or a prayer book. And you'd have to be careful about the way you treat it. You know, you couldn't throw it on the floor or sit on it or throw it in the garbage. You'd have to treat it with a great a deal of respect, just the way you would treat a holy book. So we don't want to take that chance. So in a book like this, which is, you know, we're calling a novel, so you just signify the name of God by writing G-D. Everybody knows what it means, but
right. That,
you know, that is the conventional way of doing it in the Jewish tradition.
Right, but in the same context, that when you're like in other words, like you can't write Adonai, you have to write Hashem. Am I correct?
Correct. That's right. That's part of exactly the same thing. Hashem just means the name. The name.
Right.
And it's just an indication of what you're talking about without using spelling out the actual name of God. It's exactly the same type of thing. That's exactly the same type of thing.
So in other words, or as I tell people, if you're actually, you can only use it if you're actually saying the prayer out loud, but otherwise you don't.
Right, that's it. Or you know, if it is really a holy book, like a Bible, you know, a Bible scroll, or you know, a book of the Talmud, or something like that. So these names are spelled out, or when they're said, or when a prayer is said, exactly as you're saying, Merle. But when you know, in a book like this, so you would tend to use the name, a word which signifies that name, rather than the actual word itself.
Okay, I'm just because when people read this and they go, they may not understand. Especially, they probably don't understand. it's interesting because I don't remember. I must have been a kid when I would write G-D. And then it's like every time I write, it's automatically.
Yeah. Right.
Hello?
I don't know.
Is that yours?
Are you there?
Maybe that's the thing.
All right. Can you hear me?
I can barely hear you.
All right.
You want me to call you back?
Hang on. What I'm going to do is I'm going to hang up and call back again. Okay? So you just hang on. I'll
hang on.
Yeah.
I don't know what we should do.
She said to hang on. She didn't say hang up.
You stay on this line. I'm going to call her from another line.
She said she's calling back. Did she call you to start with?
No, I called her. She may not have my number. Just a second. Let me call her. You stay on. I'm going to call from another line.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh, let me get my husband because he's trying on the other line. One second.
Okay. No, it's okay. All right. Because I just, I have a portable phone, and this has done this once before. When I put it on speaker, I mean, nothing, I don't do anything. But then now I don't have it on speaker. But
right. It sounds much clearer. But I think, Merle, we must be doing a very good show because, you know, they're trying to knock us off the air or something.
what I want to go into now, so in terms of like your background, I mean, does this kind of connote like who you and your wife are? I mean, or
right? Well, we're very, you know, frank. I'm very frank in the book. I always like to be very personal, and direct when I write, and so there's a lot of flashbacks and a lot of personal stuff in this book. This is my third book. My first book is called From Central Park to Sinai, How I Found My Jewish Soul. Both of us grew up really not at all religious. I grew up, you know, I always say I was really, you know, a major anti-Semite. I was totally
allergic to your Jewishness.
Allergic to Jewish.
Really,
my wife prefers that I should say I was allergic to my Jewishness. In any case, I grew up with zero. I mean, nothing at all. And I was totally embarrassed to even think that I was Jewish. And I ran away from it for 30 years, but it ran faster than I did. And it caught up with me. You know, when I was 30 years old, there was nothing left. And, you know, my life just wasn't making sense. And the only thing that was left was being Jewish. And then a lot of things happened that, you know, we just discovered it. So we discovered it 11 years after we were married, and we changed our whole life. That's the subject of my first book, From Central Park to Sinai. And there's a lot of that, you know, recollections and so on in this book about all the adventures, spiritual and otherwise, of our past life. But, you know, that made the whole Jewish way of life so much more precious to us because, you know, we discovered it after all those years and we realized how much we really needed it to live because, you know, nothing worked before. So that's, if you're asking how we came to this, that's really in a nutshell.
Okay, I'll ask you.
That's, oh, you want to know the story, how we came to it?
Yeah.
So, okay, I mean, I grew up, you know, in Manhattan, I'm living on Fifth Avenue. That's why it's called From Central Park to Sinai. I was always like a half a block from Central Park or less. And in the midst of affluence, my father actually is 105 years old today, and he's he's an amazing person, a famous name in Wall Street.
Roy R. Neuberger.
He founded a firm called Neuberger Berman, which has been in the news lately. Those are the circumstances I grew up in, you know, a wonderful family. We had everything in terms of affluence, material things, completely non-Jewish lifestyle. And as a little kid, I just felt something tremendous was missing from my life, a huge vacuum. My life was really consumed with searching for it. I thought I was a little nutty because, you know, you have everything, kid, you know, like, what's your problem? Why aren't you happy? But I just, you know, I wasn't happy. And then my wife and I met in high school, Fields to School, Ethical Culture School, and we began the search together. We got married when we were in college, University of Michigan, and you know, there's nothing I didn't do in my life to try to find truth, reality, peace, and nothing worked. And, you know, the last thing I looked for was being Jewish because I just didn't want to be Jewish. I didn't want to have anything to do with it. But as I said before, after a while, after 30 years, there wasn't anything else left, you know. And then all of a sudden, we discovered it. We met someone named Rebbetzin Esther Young Rice, who's a very famous speaker. And she really educated us in the classic Jewish way of life. and then we moved to the community where her husband was the rabbi in Long Island, and our whole life changed, and we had more children, and our children grew up with this beautiful lifestyle, and now our children are our teachers, and it's a whole new life. And we love to go around and speak about it because people get inspired by this. Today, people, you know, when the world is so shaky and frightening and scary, people are looking for something to hang on to that is stable and secure and they can trust. And, you know, I think more and more people are turning to classic
eternal values is really the...
Yeah, my wife said the...
And then you know how to live and how to raise your children and how to have a good life. Whereas before, it was just like floundering around. How do you know what's right, what's wrong? But now we have a solid basis for our lives.
So, okay, so in other words, whatever the Jewish law says is how you're
right, the Torah,
life.
Torah values, yes,
okay.
the commandments and the...
But we came to it through this
teaching.
Long path of trying everything else. And... you know, now we find that, you know, the more we learn and the more we do, the better our life is, the more stable, the more productive, the more real, the more you can get through everything that life throws at you. And life throws a lot at everybody.
A lot of tsuris.
You better believe it.
Oh, yeah.
And special, I don't know, it seems to be more and more and more. You know, it's a very frightening world in every sense. Not just the stock market, not just war, not just terrorism, not just pollution and the environment. And it goes on and on and on and on. People have so much personal pain.
Sickness,
pain, emotional pain. Social relationships are so difficult often. Just so much, so many troubles.
The whole upheaval is really predicted by the great Jewish sages and prophets. So that is comforting in a way because then we're also assured that we're going to get through it and we're going to have a better world.
So that, in other words, you're not questioning whether they're right or wrong.
You question everything, but yeah. You know, the Jewish way is to ask constant questions. But the Jewish way is, while you're asking the questions, you live by.
Wait a minute. Is that why we always answer a question with a question?
Yeah, why not? I just answered your question with a question. Why not? There we go. I illustrated it. That's pretty funny. But while you're living it, because you live it. That's the That's the incredible thing. You can't really understand it till you live it. But when you live this, you know, with the Sabbath and the laws of family purity and the prayers, the commandments, your life becomes
a blessing.
You feel the presence of God in every, like, everything you do. I mean, when you're tying your shoelaces, you know, you're doing it a certain way, and you just feel the presence of that. You know, your life, every detail of your life begins to make sense instead of just being chaotic and frightening and scary and, you know, like that. I want to mention also one thing. My wife alluded to this, but I think it's very relevant, by the way. It kind of answers one of the questions you asked before, and that is that among the biblical and rabbinical, you know, prophecies about the period before the coming of the Messiah and so on is, you know, the whole conflict between the Muslim and the Christian world is predicted in classic Jewish sources. I mean, you know,
thousands of years ago, it was predicted.
You look at today's headlines, and you say, like, what is going on? All these crazy things. But you know, if you look in classic prophetic, right, the Book of the Prophets and the Talmud, it says that this is exactly what's going to be happening at the you know, end stage of history before the coming of the Messiah. And that is, by the way, that first. The introduction to my book, 2020 Vision, has this prediction written that, you know, it's the first thing in the book, a classic commentary on the prophet Ezekiel describing exactly the scenario that we're seeing in today's world.
So, in other words, I don't say you believe, but you feel that the apocalypse will occur due to the Muslims? Is that...
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying the scenario we see today,
right,
conforms to prophetic predictions of, you know, how it's going to look before the coming of Messiah.
Okay.
You know, nobody's making anything up or anything in it, but it's just happening according to script, you know? I mean, that's the way it seems. If you study it, it's there. It's
sure.
Just there.
So, okay. So, but just to, you know, to throw out something, in other words, that saying, which I, you know, as a Jew, to believe that Christ was not the Messiah.
Listen, you know what? We don't argue with people. When it happens, we'll find out who's who and what's what. And we have, by the way, there are a lot of Christians who love this book, very interested in this book. I've been interviewed on quite a few Christian radio stations, and of course there are many Christians who are very supportive of Israel,
mm-hmm,
and the return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel, and the biblical borders of the land of Israel, and so on. And so, you know, reasonable people, we don't, you know, you don't have to get in fights with people.
Right.
You know, you just, you when it happens, we'll see how it happens, that's all.
Yeah. But at the same time, and I don't like when I it's like there is like as a Jew, you're dealing with either you go from Orthodox all the way to Reform in terms of, you know, how you practice or what you believe. So with the going on the opposite end, say for instance, I'm just throwing it out there. In other words, you would be against, let's say, same-sex marriage because it's not okay.
Well,
in the Bible.
I mean, the Bible. It's not what I'm. I mean, I don't make the rules up, and I'm very happy married to my wife. By the way, I just want to tell you that.
That's okay.
and, I'm a very lucky guy. I hope you get to meet her someday because she's terrific. You can read about her in my books. Anyway, but it's not, you know, what I think. I mean, you know, I think that's really an important distinction. Nobody is saying, you know, my opinion, I'm a genius, and my opinion is such and such.
Right.
It's really stated quite clearly, you know, in the Bible, you know, what God legislates, how he wants his world to be run. It's right there.
Okay. And so, in other words, and I'm just like throwing this out there.
Yeah.
So the fact that the Bible was actually written by a human being, you don't question?
Well, I don't know. The Jewish belief is that it wasn't written by a human being. It was dictated to Moses by God on Mount Sinai. That's the classic belief. It was dictated, sure. You know, that's the classic Jewish belief.
Right. But I'm saying that you wouldn't question that. In other words, let's say even in the book that you're writing, I mean, the book that you're writing really boils down to and your opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it's based on sources that I believe are are correct according to Jewish tradition, and I have a lot of very eminent rabbis, you know, who've checked the book over and have said so, and their, you know, their statements are on the back cover of the book also, in addition to others whose names are not on the back cover of the book. But I am really using my imagination within the context of what I believe is the Jewish tradition and is accurate in that. And I've gone to great lengths to make sure that I am being accurate and, you know, not, you know, putting my own view in an inaccurate way.
May I just add that that the book includes several non-Jewish characters. It's not just a Jewish book, and it's not just for Jewish people. There are many non-Jews who have read it and have loved it. And it shows that the Jewish people are supposed to be, if we fulfill our mission, that we're supposed to be a blessing to the world. And the blessings are for everyone, not just for us. And there's reward for non-Jews as well as Jews. There's a future world for the non-Jews. It's a universal book. Yeah. It's not just for Jews. I mean, just because the main characters are Jewish, it doesn't mean it's not relevant and interesting to non-Jews. And
right.
As my husband likes to point out, that the greatest bestseller in history is about a group of Jews wandering on a long journey, and this is. The new book is
the Bible.
Much that also
right.
The Bible is the greatest bestseller, and it's about a group of Jews, and it's very relevant to humankind in general.
Okay. Well, we're going to get cut off because the show is going to end. again, it's the 2020 Vision. That's the name of the book. Roy Neuberger, and are you Leah?
Yes, I'm Leah,
and
I'm the editor. My name's not, you know, in there as such, but.
Oh, okay.
But we work together in that way.
Okay. I'm sorry I'll have to end this. They're going to cut me off.
All the best.
So, yes, I'll be in touch with you guys.
Wonderful, Merle. Thank you so much. Can I mention my website?
Yes, go ahead.
www.2020visionthebook.com. That's it.
Okay, you got it.
Thanks, Merle.
Thank you very much.
All the best.
You too.
Bye.
Bye. And I'll see everybody next week where I'll be. I'll be at the hotel, and look, he's coming in there. Boy, he's funny. What's the matter?
Why?
hello to everybody. Say goodbye to everybody. I know you're the host of the show. I understand.